Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Pegasystems. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Welcome back to my interview with Gil Alturovitz, the director of the VA's National Artificial Intelligence Institute. Our topic is AI, planning for it, and making it do what you want. And let's look at some possible use cases where it is facing the veteran directly, because they have a lot of interaction with VA, with VHA, with VBA, sometimes in person, sometimes online. But those touch points seem to all offer perhaps the potential for improvement with AI. What are you looking at there?
Right. So there are a number of cases where there can be interactions with, you know, with veterans that are, you know, with a number of different technologies now that we've seen, even outside of AI. Within the AI space, there are a number of different tools being explored and leveraged. One of them essentially looks at detecting colorectal cancer by looking at colonoscopies. And essentially what you have is a view wherein essentially in real time, you're able to see images that have mapped on top of it with essentially on that image where the AI is recommending that the provider look more carefully, right? And so that's one example of one that's, you know, being used right now, being leveraged. There are a number of other ones being explored. So we can see everything from diagnostics to looking at how you provide access to different types of information, to looking at applications within scheduling, lots of different applications within the VA that are being looked at that may engage the veteran in some way.
But in all cases, it seems to be human augmentation as opposed to, well, let's let this AI algorithm make a diagnosis.
That's right. So in these cases, what we have is that the AI is making a recommendation to the provider. It would be potentially making a recommendation, let's say, on one of these other informational items, and then the individual can look at that moving forward.
And, you know, bias, talking about it in an unbiased way, but creep can come into the output of an algorithm over time. What is your strategy for ensuring that once something is deployed, that it stays true to what it is that was intended for it? As new data comes in, it could creep over time and bias could come into the operation of an algorithm precisely because they do change over time. And how do you snap back to what it is you hoped for when it was launched?
Right. So that's an important area. And it's actually one of the principles under one of the executive orders for promoting trustworthy AI. And you can also see it in the Bill of Rights, and it's part of a number of part of our trustworthy AI framework that it's important to regularly monitor the AI and to ensure and to look that the underlying data, the models are still relevant over time. It's actually, you know, let me just give you an example actually of this. So sometimes it may not be that anything changed in the model itself, but the data that it received change. So with COVID over time, the variants and the geographical locations of COVID changed, right? And so a model that may be developed by a researcher in one location, you know, and it thought about for operational uses in another medical center may not apply, right? Or it may need to be tuned for another medical center. And so, you know, these are things that, you know, you have to look at and kind of keep looking because, you know, the variants of, in this case, you know, COVID changed over time, also even within the medical center, right? And what are the predictions that you might have based on that may also change then, right? As we saw, certain variants became less lethal over time or had different types of symptoms. And so the model would potentially need to be updated, right? And so one way to do this that, you know, we're looking at is this approach, you know, having guardrails, right? Where when you look for changes over time in how, what you're expecting the model to perform and what you set up as these guardrails. And then therefore, once, you know, you're seeing that change occur, you're able to proactively take steps to either retrain the model, tune it, or replace it with another approach.
And how do you know whether the drift is in the right direction or the wrong direction in the first place? Because they could get more accurate over time.
It can become more accurate, or it can become less accurate. With the guardrails, it's useful to have them whenever there's something that's essentially unusual, either on the positive or the negative, because basically whenever something is performing a certain way, you want to make sure, you know, just like you would have in an airplane, suddenly the airplane is flying much faster, you know, that may, you know, may seem good, right? But what is the reason for that, right? It may be a bad reason. And so basically there's sort of a range that you define, just like an airplane speed or altitude. And when you're not within that range, you know, it's hard to make that judgment of it's good or bad until you kind of see the reason of why it's outside those guardrails. Yeah.
And you are working at the nexus of everything that VA does. What's your data strategy in terms of accessing and stewardship and ethical considerations of the data sources that you have to have that could be generated from any one of 1,000 different places across VA?
Right. Yeah, as you mentioned, right, the VA is the largest civilian agency, which means that it, as you mentioned, it has a large amount of data for its mission, and it often comes from different sources. And so the VA has a VA data strategy. There's also a VA data ethics principles, which have been released, and in terms of the AI component, they're integrated hand in hand with the trustworthy AI framework that was just announced by the secretary at the International AI for Health Summit. That was just a few days ago. And so if you look at data, it really provides the input for building the models. And you can almost think of the models as compressed data. So it's very important to ensure that the data, it can be integrated, that it doesn't have bias, and that we can move forward in leveraging the different data sources. And there are a number of different ways that we do that. And there's a number of ways through governance structures that these different types of data can be leveraged for when they're fit for the purpose.
What have you found with respect to just basic acceptance when you develop something that looks deployable, that could help an operation or help with the productivity and therefore the lower burnout rate of the staff? Do you find general acceptance, or do you have to do some selling sometimes?
Well, I think what we see is a lot of interest in AI and other, you know, technologies to improve these different use cases. And then at the same time, there's a lot of interest. And at the same time, right, we want to weigh the benefits and the risks. And so to present both the benefits and the risks to the different parties, right? And I think that's the key to adoption, is that when people understand the benefits and risks, then they can make a decision of whether or not they would like to adopt it. And I think that leads to increased adoption. When people have that understanding, and to do that, you essentially need to have that understanding of how the AI is working, how it's making its recommendations, and how the human is in the loop once those recommendations are made. And so presenting that information is what we found is most useful in terms of enabling adoption moving forward.
It sounds like you have almost developed a strategy for what you might call an AI pipeline, which I think a lot of agencies would like to emulate if they could.
Yes, we are. We are working on, and we have, for example, one of our pathways that I mentioned earlier, the tech sprint, is essentially a pipeline that allows us to work together with different organizations and essentially see if a solution works in a particular type of situation, and then have ways to iterate and move that forward. There are other structures that we're looking at as well that allow us to kind of scale in different ways. And we've seen interest from other agencies as well in leveraging ideas like the AI Tech Sprints and others to move these to essentially have a pipeline that can take things forward by integrating different inputs. And of course, working across all the different offices together, right? So there are a number of offices at the VA working on AI related technologies. And by working together through structures like the AI Working Group within the Data Governance Council, we're able to find innovative ways and different approaches to bringing these different types of approaches to benefit the veterans.
And essentially, then, this is a modernization effort that is different from modernization efforts that try to put in new network protocols or cloud computing and so forth. You're really modernizing the way the agency works in some ways.
So as you kind of mentioned, there's, you know, I guess modernization is kind of an interesting word, right? It kind of connotes, you know, moving forward and there are different ways of doing that. And certainly as we improve the health, the well-being of our veterans through new approaches, you know, that kind of takes us into a new era, right? And, you know, there's a lot of synergy between AI and these other approaches, right? And other, as you mentioned, kind of different pieces of modernization. And so that's where, you know, we're all working together across the different parts of the enterprise, whether it be, you know, in some places you may need new technologies or new types of equipment that can enable AI. In other places, there's a need kind of for new types of governance structures. In other locations of the VA, you need to kind of develop and find what use cases are most applicable and essentially modernizing the list of use cases that are out there. So modernization in AI really has a number of different aspects, some of which are kind of the traditional technology approaches that you mentioned, but others are around, you know, working on the biases, ethics considerations, kind of modernizing the way that we're thinking within the overall system to enable better veteran care and well-being.
Gil Alturovitz, the director of the VA's National Artificial Intelligence Institute. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Are outdated processes slowing your agency down? Now is the moment to lean into rapid AI-driven innovation to boost productivity across the full customer journey. With Pega Gen AI, AI and automation do the heavy lifting so your team can focus on the mission. And with enterprise-ready governance built in, you can innovate with confidence. Learn how Pega is putting the citizen and the mission at the center of AI-powered decisioning. Visit pega.com/govAI.
Artificial intelligence, promising as it is, takes some solid groundwork. Otherwise, results can get skewed and miss the mark. Part of the planning requires picking your most promising applications, then having a data strategy to support your goals. For one large agency approach, I spoke with the director of the National Artificial Intelligence Institute at the Veterans Affairs Department, Gil Alturovitz. We started with what goes on there.
So there's a lot of really exciting work happening right now. And we are focused on a number of different priorities in developing AI capabilities to allow for translating from research and development and moving forward to enable operational use cases of artificial intelligence. In doing so, we have created a network, National Artificial Intelligence Institute centers across the United States. There are four of them currently, and we have this path forward to really enable and through iteration, piloting, and so forth, have a way to move forward on artificial intelligence on a number of different priority areas.
And that was my next question. How do you decide where those promising areas are? Because when you look across the range of missions and then activities that the Veterans Affairs Department engages in, you've really got a lot to choose from.
Right. There's a lot of issues that are really important to the veterans. And so that's really one of our key points, is to make sure to get that veteran input through a number of different ways. We also have an advisory board. We have the VA medical centers that have different use cases that they have, that they're involved in, both that we see in research and development, and as well as that we see operational use cases. And then we have an AI at VA community, a community of people who are interested in AI, who have ideas. And finally, in some sense, we are able to also engage and get that input from really across the world through our AI tech sprints, which is a way to engage externally around specific use cases to see if there are solutions out there that may work for specific cases. And recently, actually, the upcoming AI tech sprint was just announced at our International AI Summit for Health. That was a couple days ago. And it's going to be around healthcare worker burnout.
Yeah, that's a real issue. And it sounds like maybe the priority goes to the types of applications that, even if developed by a given medical center, could be deployable across Veterans Affairs.
That's right. Oftentimes, a solution may come to one or medical center's attention, or it may be developed by a researcher there, or there's an engagement with a company in a way that it may apply to others. And so there's different approaches to make those others aware. There's an approach being developed around governance within the Veterans Health Administration as well, to ensure and bring uniformity across the different parts of the different medical centers are across the country and in different regions. And so work is ongoing there. And it's really interesting that it may be an idea that comes from, you know, a single person in one site that then informs us and allows us to learn about what potentially could scale. And some things don't scale, right? And some things are really rather specific to particular locations or situations. And we have to, you know, take a look at that and see, you know, how to move forward.
And I've heard it said that if you can't easily define what you want to do with AI for a project, it's probably not a good project. So just pulling on the string of employee burnout, I guess the question is, what is that? And what is your plan for defining how artificial intelligence could improve some aspect of that? Maybe talk us through the goal setting here.
Right. So in the AI tech sprint that we have around healthcare worker burnout, we're focused on a couple different specific areas. One thought, one area that our hypothesis is that is going to be tested here, is that if you leverage transcription and dictation and in kind of ambient environment, that is when the patient is with a provider, and be able to take that spoken language and convert it into text through artificial intelligence and natural language processing, you can effectively convert that into a proposed note, clinical note, structured clinical note, in fact, that can help the provider more efficiently capture what happened in that encounter, right? So they'll be basically suggested entries that the doctor, the physician, provider, and so forth can leverage and see if that is applicable to their encounter. So that's one way. And then the other approach is that oftentimes when you have different community notes, they may come as a fax, or may come as essentially as what looks to the computer like an image. It doesn't look like text that is readable. And so you can use AI and natural language processing, different types of technologies there, where you have essentially optical character recognition and related technologies to turn those faxes, those images that are obtained, into text. And again, potentially structured text that then could be, then the provider could look at and see and be able to find more quickly certain information within a large volume of text. So it can point them to where the location is for particular information that they're looking for. And then they can see, you know, within that image that is translated into that text, you know, if that is the information they're looking for or not. So it makes it basically faster. So all of these are really ways to make these systems work faster. They augment what the provider is doing. And of course, the provider then has the ability to then leverage that to decide what to do moving forward.
And computer vision and speech recognition or translation from spoken word to text has been around for a long time. The artificial intelligence element sounds like comes into where you take that information and then populate something in a structured format, which is the missing link. Is that where the AI comes in those cases?
Well, the AI comes in several places, in fact. So these technologies around natural language processing, as you mentioned, computer vision, have been around as and are subsets of the artificial intelligence, but recently there have been a number of developments within artificial intelligence that make these technologies much more accurate, as well as generative AI that can then generate, as you alluded to, summaries of this information in a way that is much more human readable and looks a lot more like a regular human text. Then there are, you know, related technologies that then also, of course, can transform this into structured fields, right? And artificial intelligence and subsets of that can be used to extract that natural text and convert it into structured text. So AI really can play a role in a number of these areas. And what's, I think, special now is that the recent developments in large language models, in generative AI and related technologies really allow us to put together a lot of these elements in ways that we haven't been able to before.
It sounds like generative has the best application in a federal setting when it's not something out there on the open internet, but actually applied to your own internal information, so that therefore there's no weird biases that can come in or no erroneous material that can get in there.
Well, it's interesting because essentially with AI, like any other technology, it really depends on essentially what is your use case and what you want to do, right? So if the use case is to understand what are things, you know, that are related to the internet and just kind of general perceptions around and text from the internet, then, you know, that may be the best source for that. But if things are specific to certain either medical records or veteran-specific issues that are encoded within VA data, then, you know, that may be a great way to either fine-tune the model or train a model based on that data. And there are multiple approaches to doing this, right? So it could be that you can leverage, for example, data, public data, and then add in that VA-specific data and keep it within the VA, you know, make sure that it is secure there. And there are other ways where you can just build the model using VA-only data. And there are advantages and disadvantages to doing either one, right? If you're using that public data and adding to it, you're going to be able to build a much larger model. If you build a model using only VA data, it'll be a smaller model, but it may be more specific to the VA use cases that you have, but it may not see cases or may not be as good at being able to see rather rare cases where you don't have that many examples for that within your internal data.
So the implication there is that your selection of data is not really based on whether you should have large data to train something or small data to train something, but relevant data to train an algorithm.
Right. Essentially, the relevancy is determined exactly by the use case, right? So you want to be fit for your purpose and look at the use case and then see from that, is this something that rarely occurs? You may need a larger model. Is this something that is very specific? Only the VA has this kind of information and it needs to be looked at in a certain way. So essentially it's driven by the use case, which kind of brings us, you know, round circle at the beginning to the veteran, right? So the veterans really drive our use cases, right? And then based on the use cases, based on the feasibility, based on the constraints, then we see which technology is best. And AI may or may not be the best technology for it, right? And when it is useful, then we leverage it.
My guest is Gil Alturovitz, the director of the VA National Artificial Intelligence Institute on planning for AI and data strategies for getting the results you want. We'll take a short break and return with more of the interview. I'm Tom Tamman.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Pegasystems on Federal News Network.